Our reading today comes from Hans Ulrich Gumbrecht, from his work In Praise of Athletic Beauty. And yet he does not know, perhaps does not even need to know, why watching sports irresistibly captures the attention and imagination of so many people like himself. It's a fascination in the true sense of the word, a phenomenon that manages to paralyze the eyes, something that endlessly attracts without implying any explanation for its attraction. Through this ability to fascinate, sports exerts a transfiguring power, drawing his gaze to things he would not normally appreciate, like hugely muscled wrestlers, woolen caps with shields, or half-naked bodies. Would this attraction become more intense if he knew its reasons? Perhaps, though in general pleasures do not need such legitimations, which can so easily degenerate into excessively good intention and therefore empty words. Hopefully not my words later, by the way. That's a commentary. Sports do not need this kind of wordy blessing. Still, he would not want to exclude the possibility that trying to understand his fascination may intensify his pleasure and help him learn how to praise the achievements of his heroes then and now. So I suppose the cat's out of the bag. I love sports. I want to thank Brian and others who indulged me, all of y'all who are here, the few, the brave, those willing to listen to me talk about sports. I don't talk about this all the time because I know, people who don't love sports, their eyes kind of glaze over. They start being very interested in the buffet table across the room. When you launch into a discussion of the merits of the spread offense against a 3-4 defense, or explaining the infield fly rule, or musing about whether anyone will ever break the long-standing long jump record in track and field. I don't think they will, in case you're wondering. But I wanted to share with you my joy and passion, one of them anyway, and that is in sports, in athletic endeavors. Just this morning, I was watching the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team play Chile. Spoiler alert, they were doing really well when I had to stop watching. I think they went on to win, but I didn't see the very end of the game because I had to, you know, be here. But the sheer skill and the joy and the competition, the beauty of the ball flying and bending and moving from foot to foot at rapid speed, I don't understand how you cannot love this. The U.S. team, by the way, is the favorite to win that World Cup that's happening right now. That would be their second in a row. They won 4 years ago, too. So let me get started with the caveats, the cautions here. I know it's problematic, especially professional sports. It's capitalism run amok. It's cheating and corruption. We already talked about Barry Bonds. We won't go there again. Cheating and corruption run amok. It's a festival of toxic masculinity, which I've talked about here before. These are all very problematic things. It endangers the health and safety of people, too. I know these things, and I am at least as troubled by them as anyone else. And still I feel that draw. Let me mention one more problematic thing. Since I've already mentioned women's soccer today, let's talk about sexism, too. The women's national team core players get paid $99,000 a year for their work with that team, which is a lot of money for most of us, but in the world of professional athletics, it's not that much. And the men's team, I should point out, each player on that gets paid about 2.5 times that much. And if you didn't already know this, let me just say it. The women's team is regarded as the best in the world. And the men's team is, how do you put this delicately? They are not that good. Not bad, they're good. They're just not really good. The women's team is the favorite to win the World Cup, as I just said. The men's team did not make the 32 teams that qualified for last year's World Cup. So it's problematic. They're actually, the women have a lawsuit currently making its way through to try to make equal pay the rule, fully in support of. The U.S. national women's hockey team got their suit and won a couple years ago. Anyway, so I get it. If sports is not your thing, I understand that. If you have moral and ethical objections about it, I totally agree with you. And I still love it. So I want to share what I do love about it, what moves me, because I think it's deeply spiritual. It's deeply everything that makes us who we are. And that's the cue for the first video. I have some videos to show today I'm really excited about. There's no sound, don't worry. It's just this. Here's the first one. Oh no! That's not supposed to happen. There we go. Okay. Watch. I like this part too. Watch. He's about to celebrate on the way down because he knows he's already done it. Right? There, yeah. All right. That's pole vaulting, in case you didn't know. That was actually a high schooler a year ago doing that. So I wanted to talk about grace and beauty. And I can't think of a better clip than that. It's just the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. It's amazing. Now, sports and athletics don't have a monopoly on grace and beauty, obviously. Even in the sort of movement and athletic realm, there's dance, there's music, there's so many things. I don't mean to say that it's the only place I found it, but I really am not sure I've ever seen anything as beautiful as that clip. The power and speed, the height. I mean, it's sort of ridiculous how far the frame has to come up to see where he's going for. The grace, There is not a single wasted movement in what he does. Watching the defiance and then acceptance of gravity's pull. It's so amazing. I have never done anything like that. I have never been, and at this point, I'm pretty sure never will be, an elite athlete like that. But I've had glimpses of what that feels like. I play golf occasionally, not for a while, but... And the thing I like about golf, but is also the thing that frustrates me most, is in a round of golf, you may or may not know, you hit about 70 shots if you're really, really good. You hit about 100 if you're me, which is not good. More shots is bad, not good, by the way. Just usually more is better in sports, not in this case. And so as bad as I am at golf, and I really am, I still like it. And the reason I like it is that I have never played a full round without hitting one good shot. And the problem with that is that if you hit one good shot, you think you can do another good shot. You may be wrong, as I usually am, but you think you can. And it feels so good when you do, because everything is moving all together. The ball is like a part of you connected by the club, and all of your body is moving together in one motion. It's a little bit like that, but a lot easier to do. That harmony throughout your entire body, I feel like that's a connection I get almost nowhere else. Now, I played soccer. It was actually my primary sport. I played a lot of soccer. I really loved it. I was decent, not great. And so occasionally I got a glimpse of what great players must feel. Occasionally I would make a move that felt like I didn't think about it at all. It just happened, which is when the best things happen. The skill and vision it takes to do really amazing things. I thought there's a sport, hockey, with similar play and tactics. And Wayne Gretzky is widely regarded as perhaps the best, certainly one of the best players of all time. And there's some really interesting psychological things about what great players see compared to what the rest of us do or see. And one of the things that a player like Wayne Gretzky does really well is a psychological thing called chunking, where I might see 12 people on the ice doing all sorts of different things, and he sees one or two or maybe three movements happening. The benefit of this is that if you can see the game that way, then it becomes a lot easier to make the move that's going to do the thing you want to do so that your team can score. Gretzky is incredibly good at this. I think all great players must be somewhat good at this, that instead of seeing chaos out there on the field like you or I might see, they see a couple things happening and how they might be able to affect things for the better. I think there's something to this in our lives, too, that we're sucked into the chaos of so many things happening. And if we could just put it together, if we could just clarify things, we might be able to do something. All right, next clip. We're going to talk about competition. This is from the last Olympics. This is the finals of the women's shot put. Shot put is a sport in which you take a heavy ball about the size of a bocce ball and try to throw it as far as you can. There's a little chatter here that we're not listening to, but they're about to throw. This is the reigning world champion. She throws just over 20 meters, take the lead in the competition. Another competitor. Not quite as far, just less than 20 meters. And this is the final time the U.S. athlete, Carter, gets to go. And she throws just a little bit further, takes the lead. She's currently in gold medal position, but the reigning world champion has one last chance. Not far enough. That's the end of it. I love the competition here. The idea that you get a few chances and it's on the very last chance that she somehow throws just a little bit further. By the way, that was the farthest she had ever thrown a shot put. Was in the final of the Olympics. All right. Does anyone here know about rabbits? Not the little fronting creatures, but the thing in athletics. You know what a rabbit is? Okay. In the sports sense, particularly in racing, that is, they're also known as pacemakers sometimes. And these are people you bring in as runners, and they run the first half of the race, and they run it at a relatively fast pace, and then they drop out. And they intentionally do so. And the idea is that the people competing for the championship or the record are running behind them and then continue the rest of the race at a faster pace than they would normally. This sounds kind of weird, right? Like, you should be able to run as fast as you can whether somebody's running or not with you. But it turns out that's not true. You will run faster if someone else is running faster in front of you. In fact, you'll run faster if someone is running really fast behind you, too. It's the competition, but the running in front works a little better. Now, the thing I think is interesting about this is it's a weird thing. You know, it's not cheating in any sense of the word, but it's a way to make you perform better than you could by yourself. In other words, peak performance cannot be done alone. Now, we know this in other arenas. When people are going for the home run record, it's always more fun and more interesting if there's multiple people. And it turns out that helps you perform better. Athletes perform better than they do in practice in competition, in part because the competition is better. I'll use another soccer analogy. Mia Hamm, the famous soccer player, went to the University of North Carolina for her collegiate career. She never lost a game for the University of North Carolina. So a reporter asked her, "What does it feel like to not lose?" And she said, "What are you talking about? I lose all the time. I lose in practice all the time. The best competition she got in a week was against her own teammates." A better competition makes you better, may play better. Now, there are times when this is a bad thing, right? It can drive you into the ground. You can be so competitive that nothing else matters. But in the good sense, I think this is wonderful that we are doing our very best when there are people trying to do the same thing we are. I have my own competitive streak. My kids will tell you that I never let them beat me at any game or sport. I assume when they get older that will get harder to do. But for the moment, I'm the reigning checkers champion of our household. I'm really competitive. And the good or bad news, depending on how you look at it, is that you don't have to actually participate in the sport to feel this sense of competition, right? People this morning told me how sad they are that the Warriors didn't win the championship. I'm not. I'm still a Rockets fan, but that's a different thing. But you can feel this as a fan, right? You feel bad because your team won or lost. I had friends when I lived in Mississippi, and they would go to every Ole Miss home game, right? And so they would go every weekend up there. It was quite a long drive. And the wife, who was the person I knew better, they had just gotten a new dog, and she hadn't asked her husband about it before getting the new dog. She had just done it. She felt a little bad about this, but not really bad. Anyway, so they're coming back from the football game on Sunday after having gone up for the Saturday football game. And her husband is really mad. Like, just, you can see it in his face. He's not saying anything. But he's got that look, you know, that just really is angry. And she finally goes, "Oh my God, if this is going to be an issue, we can take the dog back." And he goes, "Oh, I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm mad because Ole Miss lost yesterday." Okay. Some people laugh more at that. That's fine. Let me hit you with an Ernie Banks quote. He said, "The only way to prove you are a good sport is to lose." All right, next clip, the final clip. I'll set it up briefly. Oh, it's already happening. That's fine. Can we play that again? This is from the Paralympics, London 2012. So these gentlemen have physical handicaps that make it difficult for them to move. And this is the shot. He falls over in order to make the winning shot. He gives it all. I love that. And it's a beautiful shot. The other thing is that wasn't like the gold medal match or anything. Neither one of them ended up medaling. That was just a match during the Olympics. To quote Wayne Gretzky again, he said, "You miss 100% of the shots you don't take." There we go. Not always, but certainly sports, like just about anything else, can be exclusive and oppressive. We talked about Josh Gibson. We talked about Major League Baseball excluding black ball players. There are other examples all over the place. But I like to think at their best, sports bring people in and provide a way for everyone to participate and to improve and to compete. The Paralympics are one great example. There's many other ones. The video there of Paralympians David Wetherill, who hits the shot and falls to the ground, and Thomas Kusiak competing in table tennis. I want to tell you this. Those two guys would absolutely destroy 99.9% of able-bodied players. Okay? If you ever feel sad for somebody about their disability, don't, because those two guys do not feel sad. And they would absolutely kill you in a game and enjoy doing it. So I know that sports is far from perfect, but at its best, it provides outlets for just about everyone, perhaps as a participant or a fan, a professional or a recreationist, to be a part of it and to improve and to compete and to enjoy that feeling that I felt a few times in my life of harmony and completeness. As a minister, it made me wonder about this question. Do we do as well in church? Do we welcome people of all types and kinds and abilities and interests? I note that our chancel is very difficult to get up onto if you cannot do stairs, for instance. Do we challenge each other to reach the peaks of our abilities, to do more than we thought we could? Do we constantly seek out the grace and beauty in divine moments? Now, in our way, we do all of these things, for sure. But I say this to you, I'm an ordained and fellowshiped UU minister. I love church. I think it's amazing. And I've had at least as many, more in fact, transformative and connectional and divine moments in sports than I've felt in church. Maybe you've experienced the same sorts of things, that connection we strive for here, perhaps out in nature or in music or somewhere else. The thing I do think we do well here is that we strive to understand what has happened, to explore it and its meanings in our lives. This is the truth. We are creatures of the world, and our faith has to go out into the world, but it also needs to draw from the world back into ourselves and our congregation. This is what sports does for me. And so may all of us live life with the abandon of a child playing soccer for the first time. May we have the grace of a gymnast in the midst of her floor routine. May we welcome in people in all their diversity, all their ability, all their spirit into our congregations, our communities, our very lives. May it be so. Amen.